Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of Lexington, Kentucky. My name is Chuck. We're with you every Friday from noon to 2 p.m. here on WLXU. And with us in the studio is a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Daniel Martin Moore.
Excellent. So Daniel Martin Moore, yeah. Thank you for coming in very much.
Man, absolutely. It's a pleasure.
Making the trip down 64. All the way here to Lexington.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a lot of fond memories of Lexington because we recorded a big chunk of an album here, the Deer Companion record.
With Ben Sola.
Exactly. Yeah, we recorded that in 2009. And so, yeah, just a lot of work here and a lot of shows over the years and a lot of, you know, quality hangs with good friends, and
that's
great. I always love coming to Lexington.
Yeah, and solidifying the connection between the Lexington Louisville music worlds.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, which both are blossoming, you know, in their own both beautiful ways.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm very excited. That's great. So Daniel, the first question I have for you is, where were you born? Where did things get started?
I was born in Hardin Memorial Hospital in Elizabethtown, Kentucky.
E-town.
Hardin County. Yeah. E-town.
Nice. And where did you go after E-Town? Did you leave for college, or how did you end up leaving?
We moved when I was a kid up to Campbell County in northern Kentucky. And I went to high school there. I was a Campbell County Camel.
Is that really their mascot?
It is.
A camel.
Huh. Yeah, it's not the weirdest one. I think Bracken County is the weirdest one.
Yeah, what's their mascot?
The polar bears. Which is
both animals that probably don't show up in Bracken or Campbell County.
I guess they have polar bears in North America. I was going to say, can we edit that out in post?
Yeah, we can.
You don't have to. No, I'm kidding. Keep it.
Yeah.
Nonsense is real, too.
Of course.
I don't know. For some reason, I always think that one's more ridiculous than camel, but they're both ridiculous. They're both ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. You know, Daniel, I wanted to ask you kind of who initially got you inspired and interested in music, just in playing guitar?
Man, I mean, it'd have to be my family. My brother is a pianist and a wonderful player, also plays the organ. And just growing up, he always was playing in the house, you know, practicing. And I loved that. I still love it when somebody comes to my home and plays piano and can just listen to it, even from the other room, just to hear it in the house, I think is such a beautiful, just a beautiful thing. And my parents both really love music in their own ways. Neither one of them are, musicians, but yeah, you know, my grandmother sang in the choir and church and whistled a lot. And so it was just around, always around.
Nice. Is that initially how you got, you know, your singing chops up, singing in church?
Yeah, singing in church, choir, and then I sang in a children's choir that was affiliated with Northern Kentucky University. It was like elementary school, middle school kids.
Yeah.
I think there might have been some high school kids in the choir. It was a range, but it was like you had to like audition for it and
cool.
And it was really cool. And I feel like it taught me a lot. It also kind of taught me what I didn't want to do in a way, which I think is also really important to learn. Like what you don't like or what you don't want to invest your, creative energy in. Cause it was very rigid. I mean, it's a choir, so everybody has to be singing the right parts and like, you can't stray, which is fine. But it was always a stretch because I just kind of do everything by ear. I can't read music.
Yeah.
And I kind of, that got me into, not trouble, but just made it kind of complicated when, you know, they would hand out new sheet music and you were supposed to just be able to sight read it and sing it, you know, as a part of your section. And I always had to hear it. And once I heard it, I had it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't just read it off the page. And that was frowned upon.
Yeah. Yeah. But it seemed to have worked out though.
I feel good. I have great memories, like very fond memories of that. Cause I was exposed to a lot of beautiful choral pieces and you know, there's something really powerful about that many voices singing mm-hmm. together. You know, it's like going to see a symphony orchestra or something. It's like,
that is true.
A band is cool, but man, when you have, you know, 80 to 100 people all on the same page, mm-hmm. it's really special.
It's powerful.
Yeah, it's really, really special.
Definitely. And, you know, and I grew up in Covington, so I'm a Northern Kentuckian as well. So I think Northern Kentucky is a really unique place to grow up. Do you feel that way?
I do. Yeah. I mean, it was like, Campbell County High School is kind of way out in the southern end of the county. Mm-hmm. It's pretty rural, which was awesome. But of course we also have like Newport and Cincinnati right across the river, which is giant, giant city, old and, you know, historic and
big playground.
Yeah, there's just so much you can do in that area, you know.
True. Grippo, Skyline Chili.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, Graders.
Graders. Do you remember what the first concert you went to was? Did you go to Cincinnati for it, or was it in Campbell County?
Gosh. The first concert I ever went to was probably in Elizabethtown when I was a kid. I can remember I went to see a show by this at the church. Mm-hmm. By this group called the Gospel Lads.
And what a name.
Yeah. They were kind of like the Statler Brothers, I guess, mm-hmm. in a way. I don't remember it in great detail. But I think that's probably what it was like.
Yeah.
It was like four or five singers. And I'm pretty sure the memory is cloudy, but I'm pretty sure they were just singing to a backing track.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't a band there, but they were singing live, just like four part karaoke.
Nice.
And I remember really loving it. I remember thinking like, oh, this is great, you know, but I was probably like 6 or 7 years mm-hmm. old.
Yeah. Did you venture to Cincinnati at all for shows and concerts?
Well, this would have been when I was still in Hardin County.
Oh, got you in Elizabethtown.
But yeah, definitely, you know, once I was older and in high school and college, yeah, we were in Clifton and mm-hmm. Up at the Comet in Cincinnati.
Definitely.
And of course, Southgate House. Mm-hmm. So I've, you know, seen so many shows there. And now it moved. It's in a different location. Yeah. But in that original location, who knows how many times I've been in that place.
Right. That's where the Tommy gun was invented.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's called the Thompson House.
Yeah.
And Southgate, mm-hmm. the crew went over and now they have Southgate House Revival.
Yeah.
I think that's in Covington, actually.
No, it's in Newport still.
It is still in Newport, it's like right on the border.
Few blocks away in an old church, which is a really beautiful space. It's so different. It doesn't have any of the same feel of the original Southgate House because there was just something so strange and like weird and magical about that. Being in this old like creepy mansion but the new place has its own vibe and it's beautiful. I mean, it's this, you know, giant old sanctuary vaulted ceiling and it's pretty special.
A lot of resonance.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, the Southgate House I think is my favorite venue I've ever been to and never seen a show to.
I can
I think it's something about the over, it's kind of just how it's laid out. It's a big U shape, mm-hmm. but it kind of has these like pseudo Scarface vibes of this overhead balcony where only special people get to see the show upon the stage. I love it. And people are playing in the parlor when you walk in too. Yep. So it's like a concert before you even get to the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that about it. So where did you go to school at after Campbell County? Did you go to college?
In KU.
In KU?
Yeah.
Nice. What did you study there?
Photography.
Oh, that's cool. Why did you go for photography?
Good question.
Yeah.
I mean, lack of foresight. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I was interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved, I'm not a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't render things very well that way. But I love art. And I love like concentrating on creativity and making things and that was just the way that I really felt drawn to do it at that time. Mm-hmm. And I still love photography and still, you know, spend a lot of time doing that. It just felt like the right thing to do. And I love the program and the professors, Barbara Houghton, Barry Anderson, Matthew Albritton, all three incredible artists in their own right. And it was just the right, just felt right.
Mm. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of beautiful kind of you know, correlations between photography and music, you know, building that composition of capturing that moment and putting it up in the negative and positive space that you have to do. So do you see a lot of connections kind of between photography and your songwriting?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I think studying photography really helped me slow down and pay attention, and not just visually, but just as a whole experience, just, you know, scrutinizing things and thinking deeply about things and making choices, making compositional choices, and thinking about negative space. I think negative space is really crucial in a recording.
It's true.
You don't always have to throw everything in
all
at once, you know? And I think that's definitely been a helpful, just a helpful thought process.
Yeah. I think, you know, restraint, you know, holding back, but really showcasing what's vibrant, what's powerful, the best light, you know?
Yeah.
That's something that I love about photography. So Daniel, after NK, you did the Peace Corps, right?
I did. There was a little gap in there where I actually went to work for NKU, art department.
Nice. What did you do up there?
I was like, I kept the photo lab, like, you know, up to snuff, like mixing chemicals and making sure all students had everything they needed. And also was like looking after the art department's computer labs.
Oh, that's...
So like making sure all the printers are working and doing like, what do they call it when you,
like the IT support.
Yeah, but also like this real specific thing, like in design and photography programs, where you have to make sure like the monitors are calibrated.
Calibrated. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Brain battle.
So I did that a
Daniel
lot.
Daniel won.
Yes.
Brain zero.
Yeah, and I love that job. I also worked at a golf course during that time through college, but yeah, eventually I did go to the Peace Corps.
That's cool. And so where did you go for the Peace Corps?
I was in Cameroon.
Wow. And how long were you
Central
there for?
Africa.
2 years? Or?
I was not. I was only there for about 4 months, and I got incredibly ill and had to come home early.
Wow. So what were you doing in Cameroon?
I was teaching high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, teaching high school and just trying to learn everything I could about that beautiful place and culture, and it's just such a varied country. I mean, like, I feel like most modern countries they're sort of completely unnatural, especially in places that were colonized by Europeans. You know, the borders are just clueless and arbitrary.
Yeah, square.
And just, you know, you've got, you know, a country like Cameroon has, you know, over 150 unique languages in it. And some of those ethnic groups and tribes and of groups of people don't have any connection to each other at all. But they're in the same country. And it's not, to me, that is fascinating. And I tried to really learn about as much as I could while I was there, in addition to, you know, working and stuff. But
yeah. What were some of the challenges you experienced living there? Was the food an issue? Or?
The food was great.
Mm-hmm. What kind of food did they eat in Cameroon?
Well, they eat a lot of rice and plantains. Mm-hmm. Those are big staples. A lot of peanuts, peanut sauces, really spicy peanut sauces.
Nice.
You know, just a lot of normal sort of meat type stuff. You got your chickens and your, you know, your hogs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of interesting, like different kind of spice combinations. They had a thing called piment, which just means pepper, but it's like a specific kind of pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sauce, and it was on everything. It wasn't a question of whether there would be piment. It was just like, how much piment?
Yeah.
You know, like, you want one dash?
You're like, ice cream, great. Okay, but there's piment on top of it.
Yeah, it's like, well, you're getting piment.
You know, I think it's interesting that in countries that are just naturally hot, everywhere, that the food is the spiciest.
It is interesting.
And I think it's so that when you eat it, your pores open up and you can sweat it out.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess by the process of sweating it out, it actually cools you down. So that's why Indian food, Thai food, you know, most of the countries that are near the equator, you know, have that spicy food.
Yeah,
so,
I can see that.
So that makes sense. So yeah, what other challenges did you encounter in Cameroon?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a place that doesn't have a lot of clean water. The water infrastructure there is just pretty bad, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And most people there don't have water that doesn't potentially make them sick every time they drink it. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge challenge, yeah. You know, to live. Like, my village was about an hour away from Yaoundé, the capital, and the well, there was like kind of a communal well, and it was about a kilometer outside the village. And, you know, it was a great well, just in terms of, you know, had tons of water, no shortage, mm-hmm. but it wasn't safe.
Yeah.
Like, if you or I took a drink out of that well right now, we'd be deathly ill in 24 mm. hours.
Wow.
You know, and so many people in the village have, you know, they build up immunities to a lot of the parasites and just the waterborne illnesses and stuff.
Wow.
But that's a huge, that's just an enormous challenge, just to keep your water potable.
Yeah.
And to keep your food, you know, if you don't have electricity, to keep your food clean and free of bacteria and, to stay healthy. And that was my biggest challenge. And I actually did not meet that challenge. That's one of the, you know,
yeah.
I couldn't stay healthy, for, you know, different whole host of different reasons. But yeah, I think that's like one of the biggest problems facing a lot of Central Africa. It's such an abundant place.
Mm.
This, you know, the soil is incredible. Obviously, you can imagine what the soil is like, yeah. if there's a, you know, a rich jungle growing out of it.
For sure. Cradle of civilization.
Yeah. And, but you know, they just, not to be critical of Cameroonians, because they're magnificent people, but, to specifically be critical of that government, you know, they are a bunch of thieves, for, you know, not to, you know, to put it mildly, they robbed that country into sickness, basically, skimming so much money out of the economy instead of investing in, you know, clean water infrastructure or ways to just treat the water after it comes out of the ground. And, I think that's one of the biggest problems that a lot of quote unquote developing nations have across the whole world, is just having something safe to drink.
Yeah.
You know, and if that's affordable, I mean, you can buy bottled water anywhere in the country, but nobody can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's way too expensive.
Yeah.
And the twisted thing is that all that water is just coming right out from under their feet. It's their water. It's being taken by companies, you know, bleached or, you know, distilled or whatever, and then rebottled and sold back to them at prices they can't afford.
Wow.
It's pretty twisted.
It is. It's kind of like what Nestle is doing in California.
Well, that's Nestle doing it there too.
Yeah, right. Oh, in Africa.
Oh yeah. Nestle has Nestle and Coca-Cola. I mean, that's like, that's their thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They sell us sugar and garbage, but they sell other people in the rest of the world their own water.
Wow.
At prices that prohibit them from affording it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
People are what's holding us back from progress.
The word is evil. It's actually pretty evil. Yeah. I think Nestle is one of the most evil entities on earth, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not to be crazy about it.
I don't think that's like, crazy at all, Daniel.
If you look at their business practices and, you know, like putting the chemicals in the baby formula in China 2 years ago and just to save money. I mean, I think that's like, I don't know what other word to use, but evil.
Yeah.
You know?
Of like being willing to forget your humanity to provide a benefit to your stockholders.
Yeah.
I think Nestle's not alone in that regard.
Nope. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Well, Daniel, while you were in Cameroon, did you play any music while you were there or write at all?
I did. Yeah. I took a guitar and had a neighbor who's an awesome guitar player. He hadn't had a guitar for a number of years, but, we would sit around in the evenings and just kind of, you know, strum and play songs, and that's really beautiful. And
and what kind of music are they getting down to in Cameroon?
Well, I tell you what was popular in 2006 was Ivoirian pop music, like pop music from Côte d'Ivoire.
Yeah. Ivory Coast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, as we say here.
Ivory Coast.
Yeah, and that's like really synth heavy and like just so many just killer beats, but played on what kind of sounds like cheese ball keyboards, but but it works. It's so cool. Like it's awesome.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of that, but I also got to see some like traditional drumming. so at our at the school where we were training, the kids put on like a culture day mm-hmm. for us, just for the, you know, Peace Corps teachers, yeah. just to, like, there were some plays and like skits that they'd written, and then there was like some dancing, like traditional dances from a couple different tribal traditions, because mm-hmm. it was primarily in that part of the country in Balmaya where we were, it's the Bamilake. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of that, but then there was also some Aton. And anyway, it was really cool, but there was this one ensemble, I think it was about like 8 or 10 guys, and they make these like giant drums out of hollow logs, mm-hmm. like really big trees, and they're pitched, and they don't necessarily play, it's not like a marimba or something where it's playing a note that's mm-hmm. harmonizing. But, you know, there's low drums and high drums.
Mm-hmm. Like a tom. Like
exactly.
Like rack toms.
Yeah. But the low ones are, like, really low, mm-hmm. you know. And it was, man, it was so cool. I could have listened to that for just days. I mean, it was just beautiful. Nice. So beautiful. That was probably my favorite thing that I heard while I was there.
Yeah. Did you find, what did people know about Kentucky?
Nothing.
When you went there? Okay.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Like no clue where it was in
yeah.
the States,
yeah.
you know, but that's not uncommon.
Of
like,
course, yeah.
You know, I meet people in the United States who don't know where Kentucky is.
Yeah, so, that's true. Yeah. Most places, you know, even if KFC has, you know, sunk its talons into that country,
exactly.
you know, maybe that's all they know, or they might know about the Kentucky Derby or mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln. But that seems to be it. So
yeah, exactly.
But Cameroon, just no.
Not, I mean, there were a few people who, you know, who had heard of it, and who knew, like bourbon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
That they knew, like, there'd be really good bourbons from Kentucky. But for the most part, it was just like, oh, I think I've heard of that name. Like, but I've, like, is that by Chicago? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, well, not, I mean,
how far away are you from New York? If I come visit New York, can I come see Kentucky?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, well, you can, but you're probably going to need another day to travel there.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So Daniel, so your first album was in 2007, Stray Age,
mm-hmm.
And that came out on Sub Pop, right?
It did.
So how did that connection with Sub Pop happen?
I sent them a demo of some songs, and they miraculously were into it. And so we made that record and a couple more, and yeah, I can't say how or why.
Yeah, and that album was produced by Joe Ciccarelli, right?
It was.
Yeah, who, you know, has worked with U2, Beck, The Shins, all kinds of different folks.
Yeah.
So how was it working with him on kind of your debut album?
It was, I mean, looking back on it now, I think it was such a strange choice,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think, I mean, I love Joe.
Yeah. Did Sub Pop make that call?
We both did, you know, because they had just, so he had just worked on that Shins record, and the name of it is escaping me. Wincing the Night Away.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He had just done that one, and so I had the same A&R person as the Shins at Sub Pop, and Stuart Myers, his name, and Stuart was like, well, because I told him, I was like, man, I've recorded some things just at home on the computer or on, you know, on tape.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never worked in a studio before, and yeah. I didn't know how to make a record, you yeah. know? And so we were talking about it, and he was like, well, and he had just apparently like gotten off the phone with Joe.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, he's like, would you be into that idea? Like if I called Joe and see if he wanted to do it. And I was like, well, yeah, it's worth a shot.
You yeah, know? For sure.
So he sent Joe some songs and he was into it. And so we did it. And
where did you all record it at?
We recorded at Sunset Sound mm-hmm. in Hollywood, California.
Cool.
Which was, again, like such a weird choice for our first record. So many fond memories, because that studio is just magnificent. It's like kind of the quintessential recording studio, yeah. really, in most ways, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I look back on that and I just think, man, we could have probably done that for 1/10 of the budget or 1/100th of the budget, you know, like
yeah.
here. But it was a trip, you know, it was like, it was another one of those things where you're sort of like learning, having a great experience, but kind of learning how not to do it
mm.
in the future. Cause it's like, I think that kind of treatment works really well for a band
mm.
Or for music that is like, going to be on the radio or,
yeah.
But for what I do, I think it was just a little kind of extreme you know, just
for kind of singer songwriter,
yeah, or
guitar
just,
and vocals
for stuff that's just quiet and not doesn't have a ton of commercial potential. I think it was, you know, if you spend a ton of money to make a record, you have to make a ton of money yeah. to, you know, to earn a living, and that's just not how it works at this scale.
Yeah,
you know, and so it was a lesson learned.
Yeah, how do you feel like your music has evolved since that first album?
I feel like I know what I'm doing more. Mm. I feel a little more confident, which maybe is bad, you know. Yeah. I feel like I have the answers, which is probably never a good thing. But yeah, I don't know. I think I know my own taste a little more now, and I can when I'm making choices in the studio now, it's like yeah, that's what I want it to sound like. Right, yeah. There it is.
That's awesome.
And in 2007, when we recorded that, it didn't come out till 2008, but we tracked it in 2007. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what I liked. I had no idea is that kick drum sound okay? I'm like, I guess. I mean, it sound, I can hear it when he's hitting it. Yeah. Like, is that what you mean? You
know, like yeah.
Yeah, like I definitely hear it. Yeah. So let's go, you know. And now, I kind of know, depending on the scenario or the personnel and, you know, the lineup mm-hmm. of the band, like, yeah, I know what I want the snare drum to sound like now.
Yeah.
I didn't know that 10 years ago. Or I didn't know how to articulate it, you know?
So learning the language.
I think so. You yeah. just learn who you are over time. You're always changing and growing as a person. Very and true. As an artist, but there are some things that remain at least somewhat consistent, you know? And I think I'm maybe, hopefully have a keener insight into that, whatever that is.
Yeah, I think it's finding that unique voice, your own personality that only you can bring, and then really figuring out how to enhance that to taste all the flavors, if you will.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully it's going in the right direction.
I hope so. And so after that record, you did Dear Companion with Vince Leigh, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and as you mentioned before, you recorded that here in Lexington?
Yeah, we recorded part of it in Louisville and part of it here. About equal parts, really, about half and half.
Yeah.
With Dwayne Lundy here. And actually, Dwayne came to Louisville and we were working there with cool. him as well. And Justin Craig, who's a magnificent Lexingtonian.
Yeah, he's great.
What a guy. I haven't seen him in a couple of years, but I've such fond memories of that guy and his playing and Robbie Cosenza too. He mm-hmm. he plays drums on that record.
Yeah, Robbie's amazing musician too. And you know, I think it's that record to me is a really beautiful manifestation of Lexington and Louisville musicians coming together.
Yeah,
I always think about that, and you know, yeah. I think about it not only the physical aspect that it's physically musicians from here in both mm-hmm. both areas, but also just the mission of the album, kind of the overall theme. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, kind of what you're trying to get across with Dear Companion?
Sure. You know, it's kind of a meditation on mountaintop removal, coal mining, and not just the actual mining itself, but also just how it affects the community and the land, and how even those of us who don't live, you know, directly under it or aren't directly a part of it contribute to it, and how, you know, how we're connected to it.
Yeah.
And 'cause anybody who hits a light switch is a part of it.
It's true.
And, that's really where it sort of came from.
Yeah, and it all floats downstream. I mean, literally the headwaters
yeah.
from Pine Mountain and Eastern Kentucky float into, you know, into the Kentucky River.
Exactly, yeah. And so, yeah, that's really what we were thinking.
Mm-hmm. And you donated some of the proceeds of the album to Appalachian Voices, right?
Yeah, the artist royalties went to Appalachian Voices, and as did the advance.
Mm-hmm. And what does Appalachian Voices do?
Yeah. Well, they do all kinds of things. You know, the thing that they do that I think is the most interesting is they actually monitor water quality. Mm. They have volunteers, and maybe, I'm not sure about this, but I think they do actually have occasionally some paid staff who go out and just take water samples and test it. And they can see if what the coal companies are saying is true about what they're dumping in the water. Mm. And I don't mean to, you know, ruin the surprise for anybody, but it's never true. Mm. they lie every single time.
Yeah.
When they release a report saying that they put such and such amount of mercury or that they've disposed of this particular thing in this holding pond, it's inaccurate. At the very least, it's inaccurate. Usually it's intentionally inaccurate every time.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to work with Appalachian Voices, because they just tell everyone the truth. They just shine a little bit of light. And even though most people aren't paying attention, it's still a record of the, you know, it's kind of like the Nestle thing. It's a record of the corporate malfeasance and dishonesty.
True. So let's hear a song from Dear Companion, if that's all right. Maybe we'll hear the title track, Dear Companion. Can you tell us a little bit about this song and kind of, you know, what it's about, the songwriting process?
Yeah, this is one that Ben and I wrote together from start to finish. It's the only song on the record that we wrote, you know, completely from nothing to something together.
Cool.
Yeah, it was based on the idea for it was this letter that was in a book that we were reading called Uneven Ground. And it was a letter that a coal miner had written to his wife when he was trapped. And there was a cave-in, and he was trapped. And he wrote this letter on this piece of paper that he had. And, you know, every line was sort of like him signing off.
Wow.
And then he would come back and just write another line moments later when he hadn't run out of air yet. Mm-hmm. And then he did it again. And so just like the repetition of just saying, you know, dear companion, the beginning of each line kind of was totally inspired by that note. And also, you know, the Gene Ritchie song, My Dear Companion.
Yeah.
And, that idea lives in a lot of Appalachian music and stuff. So it's all kind of sort of where it's coming from.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. Well, let's hear it. This is Dear Companion with Ben Soleil and Daniel Martin Moore. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. I'm Chuck, and with me in the studio is Daniel Martin Moore. And we just heard a track called Dear Companion off of the album of the same name that Daniel and Ben Soleil, Lexingtonian, put together. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Daniel, I wanted to ask you kind of, are you still working on music with Ben? Are you guys still putting music together?
Yeah, we just put out a couple songs this year. Mm-hmm. In April, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. It wasn't that long ago. Just two songs, kind of as a very much in the same spirit of Dear Companion. One was called A Few More Miles, we wrote that one together, and then we did a version of Diamond Joe that we wrote new lyrics to, which we wrote together, which is really fun. And yeah, we've got a few more ideas kind of kicking around. So that was 7 years in between Dear Companion and those two songs. So maybe 7 years from now we'll
do two more.
Yeah,
that's great. And yeah, and I caught Ben's new project out at the Moonshiners Ball Festival in Premier, the Kentucky Native. It's a really interesting work too.
Yeah, it is cool. He's always, Ben is a tireless, he's tireless. He works so much, and I was going to say he's a tireless innovator, and he really is. He's just always reinventing himself and pushing himself to do new things and see things from new angles. And his, you know, his records are awfully different. I mean, from one record to the next, it's, it can be a complete change of direction. And I think that's a testament to his, he's just like a relentless, he's always, you know, trying to push himself and his creativity. And I think it's really cool. I admire that a lot about him. I think it's really inspiring, to be honest, because I can, you know, be a little complacent in that respect as an artist, I think. And so I always look up to him for that, for sure.
That's cool. So I wanted to ask you, Daniel, kind of like, you know, how do you feel like the Louisville music scene is right now? Like, do you feel like it's growing and growing and is in a good place?
I think so. I don't know if I'm the right person to ask.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't, you know, I never have felt like I've been a part of, I feel like I've been tangentially a part of a lots of different music scenes, like the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky scene. And then, you know, in Louisville, some. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of great bands in Louisville.
Yeah, who are some of your favorite musicians right now?
Twin Limb, you know, I really love this magnificent band. Of course, Joan Shelley is world-class. One of the finest songwriters that we have, period. And so, yeah, and of course, Maiden Radio, really love that band. Trying to think, there's a Heather Summers and Anna Crippen Staple. I don't know if their duo has a name. They're two, you know, independent artists, and they've been playing together around town quite a bit, and it's really beautiful. It's, they both have gorgeous voices and interesting sensibilities. Yeah, off the top of my head, I would say.
Cool. Power of harmony.
Yeah, they harmonize a lot, but there's also, like, Heather just has this, like, crystal clear, almost like Roscoe Holcomb.
Wow.
Kind of just, like, laser beam kind of voice. And it's so powerful. Like, when she really, when she wants to, she can knock you down, you know? But she can also sing really softly. And there's just something kind of out of time about it. Not that it's not, you know, in sync, but, like, it just doesn't exist. It doesn't exist
in the mortal coil,
but it does exist.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's really special.
That's awesome. So Daniel, I wanted to ask you, so in 2011 you put out In the Cool of the Day, which was mostly a gospel album, right? So can you explain kind of how that came about, why gospel?
Well, I just, those are some of my favorite songs, and I mostly made that for my family. And then we decided to release it. So it was kind of like a fun project and a fun thing to do, and then we put it out.
Yeah, and then after that, you went on a tour with Iron and Wine, right? Out to Europe. And
we did, yeah. I played in the UK and one show in Ireland, and that was great.
Yeah. Do you feel like audiences differ in Europe than they do here in the U.S. at all?
I think so, and it varies from country to country, you know. Yeah, I think it's definitely different because it's just a different culture, you know. But for the most part, I think people are willing to take more of a chance and listen to things that they might not know. And they're also generally much more respectful over there. No, I'm not trying to throw us under the bus, but there are a lot of venues where quiet music works here in Kentucky and in the rest of the United States. There's no doubt. And we've had wonderful experiences all over playing for incredibly generous and attentive crowds. And it's an honor that people pay attention. I mean, it feels great when people pay attention to you, even day to day life. It's just, it's a real privilege. But I find it's more common over there to to meet a crowd like that than it is here, for sure.
Yeah, people who shut up when the band starts playing, you know.
God bless them.
I know. You know, and I think, yeah, we were talking about this a little bit off the mic, but there are some venues, I think, that get a reputation for being a place that respects the artist, respects this as a venue and a vehicle, you know, to experience art. So people have that kind of humbleness to realize that their conversation isn't as important as, you know, what's happening on the stage. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
So can we talk a little bit about kind of old Kane Tuck recordings? Because that album was put out on Recordings.
Okay Recordings.
Yeah, so that was your label, right?
Which record?
Sorry, In the Cool of...
No, that was Sub Pop.
That was Sub Pop?
Yeah.
Okay.
But after that, Farthest Field was my first foray onto my own label, which is the fourth release from the label. And that was a record I made with Joan Shelley.
What made you want to start your own record label?
It just seemed like the right time. You know, I knew that I wasn't going to keep working with Sub Pop forever, you know, even though I have no problem with it. You know, they're wonderful. Like, I love them, and I owe everything that I've done to this point to them, really. Mm-hmm. You know, they set me on this path, and there's no way I would have been able to do any of the things I've done in the last 10 years, really, without Sub Pop, without their push and their encouragement and investment and, you know, just... but yeah, I mean, I knew that would come to an end eventually, because, you know, like any business, you know, you can't lose money forever.
Yeah, you know? For sure. So
I knew that the scale would have to shrink for my own records. And also, I felt like I was in a position to try to encourage some other artists I really loved to make records and to make some music. And so, you know, the first thing we did was from Maiden Radio, and they had recorded this lullaby album for Julia Purcell's daughter. They actually recorded it while she was still pregnant.
Wow.
And they had no intention of releasing it. They made it for the baby.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, they gave it to me because they're sweet and we're friends. And I just loved it so much. I mean, you can listen to it. We released it. I talked them into letting me put it out. And I was like, look, I'm starting a record label for you guys.
For this lullaby record.
Like, you know, and it was kind of true. Like, that was really the thing that sort of, I'd been kicking the idea around for a couple years, and I was just like, well, here it is. Like, this is done. It cost us nothing to make it. Let's just do it and see what happens. And, you know, and it was great. And that record still does really well. Like, you know, and that was in 2011, that was 6 years ago. And from then on, it just kind of, I switched over to it about a year later.
Yeah, can you talk about Farthest Field, kind of how that developed?
Yeah, well, you know, that was weird. That record ended up being nothing like what we had intended. Originally, you know, Joan came out on tour with me and singing with me and playing banjo in the band. And we were doing a couple duets. She was singing on my songs, but then we were singing a couple other like covers that we thought would be really fun. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Vashti Bunyan's Charlemagne song, which we both really loved that record. And so we thought, you know, at the end of that tour, it was in a couple different runs of shows, it was just like, well, let's get together. And like this, I think we both kind of recognized like, this is something kind of special, and we really love singing together. Mm-hmm. And I'd gotten such great feedback from our friends and families. They're just like, wow, that's, you know. So we kind of were thinking about it and decided to make a record. So we came together with like a list. We made a list of like classic or songs that we really love, like covers basically that we were going to do together. And then the first kind of coffee meeting we had where we were really thinking about doing it, you know, Joan was like, well, I've got this song that I wrote that I think would be really cool. I was like, well, let's do a demo. And then a few weeks later, I was like, you know, I've got these like three songs I've never recorded. And like, I think they'd be really beautiful if we did them like this. And we ended up with a 10 song, all original record.
Yeah, that's great.
All the covers just slowly got pushed out.
It all starts with a sketch.
Yeah. So it's all of our own songs, and each written, you know, all the songs are either mine or Joan's. You know, we kind of brought completed songs to the table.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one was kind of a surprise how it came about, and I love that record, though. I'm real proud of it.
Yeah, did you feel like it was a lighter process to record your own album and kind of put out your own record with your own label versus working with Sub Pop? Yeah.
Well, and, you know, if somebody else is recording it and mixing it, it's easier, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, I believe
it's
that.
Less work. But no, I found, you know, over the years, I found that I really love engineering. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, it's another lesson learned. And I love to record things. I love to record my own songs, but other people's songs as well. And to produce things, it's something that I think is really wonderful. And just to kind of help facilitate or to create an environment where other people can make what they want to make, mm-hmm. is really cool. And it's I've been really lucky to be able to do that over the last few years. And it's a different kind of work, but it feels really productive and creative. And even if it's not, even if you're not exactly, you know, in the driver's seat or whatever, it's pretty great.
Yeah. And can we talk about Archives Volume 1? I know that came out in 2013, and you're about to release Volume 2, right?
It's out.
Yeah, it is out.
Last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Volume 1 is just this, like, collection of things we recorded in the studio, mm-hmm. that we never released, or there's a live tune. There's a demo or two on there. Just kind of these little odds and ends that were kind of cool and floating around, but we had no home.
So yeah.
Kind of scooped them all up into one basket.
Cool. When were they recorded, or where are they from?
Oh gosh, all over. I mean, from, let's see. Is there one from Stray Age Session? I don't know. I can't think. Definitely there's a song or two from In the Cool of the Day, mm-hmm. From that session. And oh, the oldest thing on there is from 2008, the Stray Age release, like album release show. We mm-hmm. recorded that. And the version of Smile, that standard, is from that show.
Cool.
From when that record came out. So
that's fun.
Years ago.
Do you have some other work that's just kind of laying around that
Tons.
You might put out?
I feel like all musicians, you just end up with so many recordings stacked up mm-hmm. that you haven't done anything with, rehearsals or demos or whatever. And yeah, there's going to be more volumes. Mm-hmm. Just a matter of like sitting down and listening through all that stuff and taking, you know, not being, just having the patience to
yeah, to go through it,
open up that box and spool up the tape, you know.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So maybe let's hear a song. Let's listen to a song off of A Golden Age, which
cool,
you put out in 2015.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that album?
Yeah, that album was a long time coming. Kind of the first, in a way, it's like the proper follow-up to Stray Age, mm-hmm. my first record.
Yeah.
Because everything I did between the two was, you know, a 50-50 collaboration or an archives release or like...
Or lullaby record.
The gospel record.
Your gospel record, yeah.
Yeah, that was... you know, I didn't write most of those songs. And so, like, this was, you know, an album of 10 songs, and I wrote them all. And it had been a while since I'd released one like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's cool. And so we're going to hear a track called How It Fades.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about this song?
I wrote it 2 weeks before the recording session. It was a last-minute addition to the album. And this is a true... This recording, I feel like, really captures like everyone who was a part of that session. So it's Dandorf Jr. on piano, Dave Given on drums, Alana Rocklin on electric bass. Dan's also playing the organ in overdub. Mm-hmm. I'm singing, not playing any instruments. And then Kevin Ratterman, who is the recording engineer, and Jim James, the producer. I had the idea to use, we were using a drum machine as a click track, mm-hmm. kind of in our headphones, and it was their idea to bring it into the mix, because they could hear it in the monitors, and we had Dave playing the drum beat, which was really beautiful, and then we're, you know, they were just like, we need to leave that in there, you know, that needs to be in the song, and so we mixed that in, like, kind of low, kind of quiet in the mix, but I feel like this song is kind of perfectly captures all the collaborative spirit and the incredible contributions of the band and everybody's really doing their thing in this song.
Cool.
You know, everybody's really doing what they do best, I think, in the song. And yeah.
That's how it fades. So here we go. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU, and we're talking with Daniel Martin Moore. Here's a track off of his album Golden Age. This is How It Fades. Everybody, welcome back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. I'm Chuck, and we're here in the studio with Daniel Martin Moore. Great. Why? How's it going, Daniel?
Still good.
Still good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Just got a little water during that song. Feeling refreshed.
Feeling revitalized. Excellent. And so, so Daniel, I want to talk to you about your new album that you have coming out here soon, Turned Over to Dreams. It's all lullabies, is that right?
It's a lullaby record, yeah. Yes. Top to bottom.
Excellent.
27 minutes long, and it was, yeah, intentionally. I mean, everything that is in there, sort of is trying to be as soothing and lulling as possible.
As calming as possible. That's great. So where are you recording it at?
I recorded
it. It's already done?
Yeah. It's done. It comes out on July 7th.
Oh, wow.
I recorded it at home. Mm-hmm. And mostly just me. There are a couple other musicians. Scott Moore plays violin. Charlie Patton plays cello. And Alexis Marsh plays all the woodwinds. So there's saxophone, clarinet, flute. But yeah, that's, and the rest of it's just me tinkering in my living room.
Cool. Are there any other projects that you're working on right now at the moment besides this release that's about to come out?
Yeah, I'm working on a new record, kind of in pieces. We started in February and hopefully it'll be out early next year.
Cool.
I'm going to wrap it up this summer, and I'm producing a record for a guy named Daniel Lobb, who is a Louisville singer-songwriter. Extraordinary songs. I can't wait for people to hear it. In a lot of ways, this will be his first like proper record. Mm. He's done a lot of recordings. You know, he's young. He's maybe like 25. Mm-hmm. But he's done a lot of recordings, you know, through college and stuff. But this is kind of his first thing where I think he's written everything and is really, you know, really kind of taking the creative helm. And it's amazing. I can't wait for people to hear it.
Cool. That's exciting. Yeah. Are you going to put that out on OK?
I don't know yet. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, if he doesn't get a better offer, we probably will.
Yeah. Yeah.
But hopefully he'll have some better options.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're recording that with him. Are you engineering any other records?
That one and my new one, I'm kind of, I'm working with a friend on that who's also like co-producing and co-engineering. But what else is going on? Yeah, we're working on, I don't know if I should say this or not. She might smack me, but we're working on a record from one of the wonderful musicians in Maiden Radio named Julia Purcell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met Julia at the KNLT retreat.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, this past week.
Oh nice.
Yeah.
Nice, nice. Yeah. She we've been chipping away at some of her songs. She's written so many beautiful songs and has never released them really. Mm-hmm. And so we've been working on that for over a year, just kind of in piecemeal, recording a song here and there. And it's great. I hope she'll release it someday.
Yeah, that'll be exciting to listen to, for sure.
She's extraordinary.
Yeah, she's got an amazing voice. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, Daniel, so right now you're on kind of a house shows tour of Kentucky, right? And, well, there's a few outside of the state, but...
Yeah, we got one more tonight here. Well, last week... here in Lexington.
Yeah, and I know you all played up in folk school, right? Up in Ludlow, Northern Kentucky.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that spot?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I hadn't been there before, but they really have just it's a really cool space.
It is.
And the people are so sweet, and we had a great, great crowd, and yeah, all around, just, you couldn't ask for better, you know?
Yeah, I think for me, having grown up about, I don't know, a 15-minute walk from there.
Wow.
It's amazing to see the culture that place is injected into Ludlow and really rowdy in that whole area. You know, Jerry Springer also does a podcast out there every Tuesday.
Yeah, I'd heard that.
What a funny thing.
That is weird.
Yeah, it's super weird. But anyways, so Daniel, I guess thank you so much for coming in and talking with us and spending some time. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. And I hope, I wish you all the best here. It's a beautiful station, and what y'all do is, it's right on. It's really cool.
Thank you very much. You know, we always, you know, we're here to promote the home team, you know, uplift Kentuckians any way we can.
Yes.
But also celebrate, you know, all the vibrancy and the brilliance and the uniqueness that only a place like Kentucky can produce.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful place to be alive in.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
So let's finish things out with a song off your upcoming release, which is coming out here pretty soon. You said July 7th. July 7th.
Yeah, Friday, July 7th.
And where,
I think it's, I don't know, hopefully I'm not getting that date wrong. That'd be funny. I've had it in my head that it's July 7th. Yep, it's July 7th.
It's July 7th. Great. And where can people go to pick up that record and learn more about your music?
DanielMartinMoore.com. is a place that could be visited.
Mm-hmm.
because there's no direct calls to actions, right?
Appreciate that, yeah.
We're one to be so inclined.
This is not your first radio, Daniel.
One could visit any number of websites, such as
there is the possibility that exists that you can visit the danielmartinmoore.com.
DMM.computer will also get you there. OKRecordings.com. But yeah, they the record is available in all the standard places. You know, when the time comes, it's all over the internet and all those things. And also, there's a wonderful place here in town called CD Central that if perhaps one was so inclined,
it's true,
perhaps one might go there.
Yeah, you can. You do. You may possess the ability to go purchase it at CD Central and support your local record store if you so choose.
Love those people. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, shout out to Steve. Yeah,
absolutely.
They're great. You got to give it up for local record stores.
The best.
Definitely. So, Daniel, well, let's finish this out with a track called Turn Over to Dreams off the album of the same name.
Thanks, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniel. Just as the world